On October 1st, the CDC, FDA, and numerous other health departments and organizations announced a nationwide investigation into an outbreak of lung injuries that have been associated with vaping. For years, vaping has spread through the U.S. as a substitute for smoking cigarettes, a way to stop smoking cigarettes, a way to take marijuana, and as a cool recreational tool. In the last few years, we have also seen vaping being utilized by teenagers in increasing fashion. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be taking a look at the vaping outbreak.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not a show or any information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You are welcome. And as always, Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, a culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PAXinc.org. Go ahead and head over there. Leave them a review. Leave a donation. Become a member. Read a book. Get involved, take a survey, tell a friend to tell a friend, do whatever you can to help them because they are doing whatever they can to help you. Also, I want to draw some attention this week to the fact that there is a survey going around that you should take. And I'm going to link to that survey on the website. It's about the PAX Law Cards. They're coming out with a new product and they want to know what you think about it before they launch it. So go on over to the website, the Lessons from the Screen website. And take that survey. It's another way that you can help them out in addition to all the other ways that you can help them out. So, without further ado, I bring to you this episode on the vaping outbreak. And that pause was there because I was trying to figure out a way to rhyme that, but nothing came to mind. So, it is what it is. So at the risk of sounding like your uncle at the barbecue after you finish showing off a brand new dance, vaping ain't new. People have been heating liquids to gas and inhaling that vapor for more than 1,000 years. Vaporizers in the modern age might be smaller and more sporty, a little bit more sophisticated, but they are still functionally the exact same things as the heated stones in ancient Egypt. All over the globe at varying times, thousands of years ago, various cultures developed different methods for creating vapors and inhaling them. Y'all ain't doing nothing new. But this isn't to be confused with simply smoking, because I know a lot of people seem to think that vaping and smoking are the same thing, especially people that don't like vaping. And in that, vapors have a point. Vaping is different from smoking. There is a difference between a vapor and a gas, and there is a difference between the process used when vaping versus smoking. For starters, a vapor is a state of matter that exists in two phases simultaneously, a liquid and a gas. It has traits of both the liquid and the gas. Vapors can be maintained by managing the pressure and or the temperature affecting a substance. The more pressure you have, the less temperature you need. The more temperature you have, the less pressure you need, and vice versa. You get what I'm saying. But most importantly, vapors with regards to vaping tools don't cause chemical reactions that create new substances to be inhaled. This is both a gift and a curse. You see, vaping tools like e-cigarettes take a cartridge filled with the substance, convert that substance into a vapor, and allow that vapor to be inhaled by the user. The gift in that is that you don't have all of those additional chemicals and particles being created to be inhaled into the lungs. The curse of that is that what is inhaled is more pure and can be, depending on what's in the cartridge, more destructive. And so, to take this breakdown a little bit deeper, we know what a gas is. So we talked about a vapor, Let's talk about a gas, and we know what a gas is. It's one of the three regular states, regular singular states of matter, the other two being a liquid and a solid. It's the stuff that makes riding in an elevator a dangerous experiment. It's also the stuff that my mom claims she has whenever something isn't feeling quite right in the world or in a particular situation. Maybe that's gas. But smoking is not simply inhaling the gas form of a substance packed inside of a cigarette. Smoking is a chemical process that uses combustion to quickly make a gas out of a solid, but also causes new substances to be created due to the high temperature effects on the substances present in the cigarette, cigar, or other smoking device, whatever it is you're puffing on. These temperatures get to be as high as 900 degrees during puffs and remain as high as 400 degrees in between puffs. So when you light a smoking tool, combustion takes place and the atomic makeup of the fuel, the substances being smoked, changes. The result of this change is the ash that is knocked off of the smoking tool and a plethora of gaseous compounds that get inhaled into the lungs, as well as particles, small particles. The roughly 2,500 chemicals already found in tobacco before combustion turn into more than 4,000 after combustion as heat reorganizes the atoms present in tobacco and the paper when smoking cigarettes. And it does the same thing with cigars and pipes and anything else that you smoke. So we know that some of those newly created substances are tar, cyanide, formaldehyde, carbon monoxide, and more, all of which are extremely toxic, especially in anything more than trace amounts. But while tobacco produces the nicotine in cigarettes, it is more important to remember that it is the combustion that produces many of the toxic chemicals and particles present in smoking. As such, even tobacco-less smoking is dangerous, and that's my PSA for the day. Smoking anything ain't good for you. But all that aside, these differences between smoking and vaping have been touted by many as the reason why vaping is superior to smoking. And for a while, vaping companies have muscled in on the smoking market by advertising themselves as a product that can help people quit smoking. As vaping devices became cooler and vaping cartridges began to be filled with all sorts of flavor, both with and without nicotine, more and more people started vaping. It was healthy, it was cool, and it helped people quit smoking. With all of that going for it, of course, kids also got involved. But that's getting a bit ahead of ourselves. So let's go back in time. Let's go backwards all over again. So while it's true that vaping has ancient origins, the modern e-cigarette can be traced back to the late 1920s, and modern vaping specifically has its origins in the mid-1960s. But the idea never really took off. In the 80s, electronic smoking and vaping devices rolled back around, bringing the term vape into modern history as a verb. But the e-smoking devices produced never reached any level of commercial success. In the 90s, there was a flurry of legal activity surrounding electronic smoking systems. Numerous patent applications were submitted from everything from electronic semi-combustibles to pure inhalers. Tobacco companies who were feeling the effects of the crackdown on cigarettes finally began taking a serious interest in e-delivery systems, and this is when they got involved in the game. But the process was stalled when the FDA did not give approval to bring an e-cigarette to market. This wasn't because of the tobacco, as tobacco wasn't regulated by the FDA at that time. It was because the drug delivery system, which was regulated by the FDA, wasn't an approved delivery system. With that, the 90s ended and e-smoking devices seemed to stall out in America as commercially viable or as anything that could even remotely achieve the level of wide acceptance. E-cigs wouldn't be a commercial product in the U.S. until 2006 on the back of a product made in China, no less. As the use of e-cigs grew internationally, More and more claims were being made about the safety of them and their use as an aid to stop smoking. So much so that the World Health Organization had to release a statement in 2008 saying that it did not consider e-cigs to be a legitimate therapy for smokers trying to quit. The statement went on to say that there was no scientific data supporting the notion that e-cigs are safe and effective, and that marketeers should stop proclaiming that in their advertising and on their websites. Later in October of 2008, a study done in New Zealand concluded that carcinogens and toxicants are present below harmful levels in e-smoking devices. Now, the study was funded by Ruyun, the Chinese makers of the e-cig that was being studied. And e-cigs don't use combustion and are tobacco-free. The cartridges can be, meaning you can get a direct concentration of the drug you want without all of the extra stuff. Nicotine in the case of tobacco. And as such, the findings of the study make sense when looking at the study narrowly for one device and one drug. Ruyuns were developed to be a safe alternative to smoking by a smoker. But, and I want to say this, interested parties fund research. And this is something that I feel like we have got to get on board with. People often say, why should we trust research from cigarette manufacturers? And I agree with that. Funding definitely carries bias because you're going to, scientists are going to feel pressured to come up with the results that their funders want in order to keep receiving funding. Funding organizations might find scientists that already have a bias towards the perspective that they want, so they don't have to apply any direct pressure because some scientists are going to find what they want to find in the research and in the studies. But everything goes back to interested parties fund research. That's just common sense. You're not going to fund something you're not interested in. And that's on both sides. So if we are truly interested in a third party funding mechanism, then we need to do something other than what we're doing. The government is only going to fund research that is interested in. Corporations are only going to fund research that they're interested in. And third-party citizen groups, citizen organizations, nonprofit organizations, whatever you want to call them, they're only going to fund products, or they're only going to fund research that they're interested in. So by that margin, almost all research, with the exception of third-party checking, experimental checking research, is going to be biased in some way, shape, form, or fashion, and is going to be influenced by those funding them. I think the best thing you can do to try to get around that is to get into the literature. Don't just read the conclusions of your reports. Read the methodology. Read everything about the report. Get familiar with how the study was done, and then make up your own minds about whether or not the study is credible. That's the only way you're going to get around that until we develop a system where people can get funding for doing research on whatever they want to search from third-party, non-interested people, which good luck with that, then we're going to have to deal with the fact that most of the research that we get, most of the studies that are being conducted by an organization, good or bad, with bias. So that's not to say that these studies should be discounted because they're paid for by a corporate entity. And it's not to say that these studies should be accepted because they're paid for by a nonprofit organization. It is to say that more of us as individuals need to read the full report, get familiar with the full report, understand the methodologies, and be able to spot the strengths and the weaknesses of the study, and be able to assess credibility on our own. So, back to this thing. Despite this report, concerns over nicotine addiction persisted and countries began banning e-cigarettes all over the world in 2009. The FDA, which had gained control of tobacco products, also banned e-cigs because there was still an unapproved delivery device, and the U.S. Customs and Border Protection began rejecting the entry of e-cigs into the U.S. With all this pressure, the major e-cig players decided to form a coalition. The Electronic Cigarette Association was formed in 2009 and didn't last very long, but it was replaced repeatedly and continues to be updated and replaced by various new organizations that are coming together in order to represent the electronic cigarette industry. Probably not the best idea, though, on the whole, considering it was the tobacco industry following in the footsteps of previous generations of the tobacco industry. But the war continued to heat up as the tobacco industry found a new lease on life in the form of e-cigs, and the FDA trying to grapple with this new delivery system. Numerous tests were run, most of which indicated only trace amounts of some of the harmful chemicals available in abundance in smoking. And even back in 2009, some of the FDA tests revealed nicotine in some of the cartridges that was supposed to be nicotine-free, and that the labeling did not indicate the toxic substances present, even in trace amounts. This was a concern because the marketing of cigarettes to kids was still fresh in the minds of many, and there was a fear that e-cigs would be marketed to kids who would then get hooked on nicotine. Opponents of the FDA stance and their studies argued that the trace elements present in e-cigs were the same elements at the same quantities found in approved cessation products. That means the same stuff that they found in e-cigs was the stuff that was found and stuff that was already approved by the FDA to help people stop smoking. Numerous doctors fell on both sides of the equation, as always happens, and things looked like they were like they did in the height of the cigarette boom in the mid to late 1960s, politically and medically. Although things were a little different because people had the experience of the 1960s to fall back on, that was clouded a bit by the fact that these devices were not combustion devices, and so a lot of the dangers of smoking were negated. Later, that same year in 2009, Oregon announced a lawsuit that was settled in 2010 alleging that an e-cig company was making false health claims and targeting children with sweet flavors. The FDA statement that e-cig cartridges contained the substance that was also used in antifreeze was enough to get several states to take action against e-cigs. California tried to ban them, but Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed the bill, asserting that if adults wanted to purchase the products, they should be able to do so. And amidst all this fighting, major vape fests were held all over the world in 2010 and subsequent years, with the first one in America being held in Richmond, Virginia in 2010. Through 2013, e-cigarette companies were buoyed by the growing distrust of the FDA, the CDC, and the World Health Organization, leading to a large public outcry of support for electronic cigarettes and vaping devices. People held large vaping parties of varying names. Vaping bars began opening all over the place, and people began buying vaping devices for their children and even relatives and friends that didn't smoke. While all of this was going on, the major medical organizations all lined up against e-cigs, urging the Obama administration to force the FDA to move forward with plans to take control of the e-cig industry and issue more controls and regulations on e-cig drug delivery devices and cartridges. Meanwhile, the e-cig industry reformed into a new coalition. Consumer groups formed major coalitions, and even the e-cig liquid manufacturers formed a coalition. And all of these coalitions linked up into an e-cig Voltron fighting against regulations and impediments to easy access to e-cig devices. And while the consumer groups were focused on maintaining and even increasing access to e-cigs as a way of helping people quit smoking, the concerns of the FDA with regards to products marketed towards children went unaddressed by all parties. By 2014, the CDC announced that there had been an 800% increase in child vaping over the previous 3 years. 80% of those questioned about why they vape said because it comes in the flavors they like. Advertisements and conversations around vaping mirrored those around smoking decades ago to some degree, And even the flavor profile of some of the fruity and sweet flavors mirror the flavor profile of kids' candies and Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid. They had a red vape cartridge. Other flavors, according to reporting done by the LA Times, in reviewing FDA documents, also show high levels of toxicity, like the cinnamon flavoring that contained cinnamaldehyde. And what's interesting about that to me is that cinnamaldehyde is the naturally occurring substance that makes cinnamon. Cinnamon oil from cinnamon bark from a cinnamon tree is roughly 90% cinnamaldehyde. Now, that does not change the fact that it is still a toxic substance in large quantities, but I wasn't able to find out how much of the substance is used in vaping liquids. However, aldehydes in general were found in solutions, and that family of substances can restrict airways as well as cause rashes and stuff when it gets on the skin, like cinnamaldehyde and various other things. But by 2016, the number of children vaping had reached millions. About 70% of them thought they were just vaping flavoring, while about 15% admitted to vaping nicotine, and about 5% admitted to vaping marijuana. And about 6% admitted to not knowing what the hell they were vaping altogether. More kids reported not knowing what they were vaping than those that reported vaping marijuana, which is in and of itself extremely troubling. I don't understand. I do understand, because people are people. And just as many 10th graders as 12th graders were reporting vaping, with 8th graders only slightly behind. Most people felt safe because vaping was being promoted as safe instead of the more accurate label of simply being safer than smoking tobacco. The concerns about not knowing exactly what was in the cartridges was only seemingly affecting the FDA and the CDC, who were and continue to suffer from a credibility crisis in America for a number of reasons. That's a whole other show. And as mentioned earlier, some of the products marked nicotine-free had been discovered to have nicotine in them. In 2016, the FDA took steps to ban fruity flavored liquids from the market, citing a concern that tobacco companies were once again targeting kids. But the science about vaping was inconclusive with regards to kids transitioning to cigarettes and on the net harm of nicotine without the combustion effect of smoking tobacco. Even though there were decades of experience to rely on, the necessary studies hadn't been done, and the tobacco industry had partnered with the e-cig industry to produce favorable studies that called the FDA science into question. After dozens of meetings and public hearings, the vast majority of which were with tobacco and e-cig industry lobbyists, the FDA decided to drop its ban on flavored fluids. Over the next 3 years, nicotine use exploded amongst middle and high school children, an explosion driven by the explosion in vaping. The occasional call to poison control centers from a parent or a friend concerned over a vaping-related issue prior to 2016 grew dramatically over the next 3 years. And now in 2019, 25% of 12th graders, 20% of 10th graders, and 9% of 8th graders vape nicotine. That's 1 in 4 for 12th graders, 1 in 5 for 10th graders, and 1 in 11 for 8th graders. It has become accepted science that nicotine has a different and more harmful effect on developing brains than it does on developed ones. But the nicotine issues, while significant, aren't the cause of all of the problems. And they aren't really even the cause of why I'm doing this show. There is currently an alarming lung injury spreading through the vaping community. 1,300 cases have been reported through 49 states, with 26 confirmed deaths, and no one is really sure about what is going on. What they do know is that all of the people suffering from the lung injury, which they are calling an injury because they don't know what else to call it, they all vape. With millions of kids vaping, there is a concern that this is going to get worse before it gets better. People that are vaping nicotine products are at risk, but people that vape marijuana products represent a larger portion, the majority, of those suffering from this lung injury. There also seems to be a prevalence amongst those vaping street-created products. 70% of the victims are male, 80% are under 35 years old. And this problem is exacerbated by the fact that many kids that thought they were vaping flavors have now become addicted to nicotine and can't stop vaping. Even with all of this happening, many are still fighting against more regulation in the vaping industry, and many are still claiming that vaping is 100% safe. Despite all those years of dealing with the tobacco industry, society was still unable to prevent a resurgence of the tobacco industry, as most of the work that was done to reduce smoking tobacco and nicotine addiction amongst kids has been undone by vaping. And vaping has largely come to prominence largely through the same marketing tools of coolness and safety that ushered in many tobacco products. Now, hear me out. I'm not here to say vaping is bad. That's not the purpose of this show. If you like to vape, vape. If you're an adult, I would hope that you would make sure that you get your cartridges from a reputable, incredible source. But if you like to do that, you're an adult. You're more than entitled to doing that. If you are cool with your kids doing that, they're your kids. I would hope that you would get cartridges and liquid from a reputable, incredible source. But at some point, as a community, we've got to take responsibility for the things we allow to happen. And we've got to stop. And the reason I'm addressing this is because, anyways, I go back to my other point before I get back to this. We've got to stop allowing street scientists to dictate what is and is not healthy when they don't have the tools in order to accurately assess a problem. The reason why I'm addressing this is not only because it's significant, but also because I see a threat to my own community, because I know a lot of us like to be our own street chemist. We're our own street pharmacist, and we like to share our product with the rest of the world without a thorough understanding of how the things we mix together actually interact with each other outside of the human body, much less how they interact with each other inside of the human body. We don't do a lot of checks on the components. We don't heat the components up. We don't freeze the components. We don't let the components sit for a while to see how they degrade. There are a lot of things that we don't do to ensure the safety of the products that we share with our friends and family members and potentially open up and share with our quote unquote customers and clients. And so you run into these problems where there could be who knows what sort of issues happening in the community, because we're not fond, and I understand it because I'm not fond either, of the medical establishment. And we're not going to get adequate quality health care in most medical establishments anyways. But this vaping crisis, and one of the reasons why this struck me is because I was at a school not too long ago trying to talk to somebody about getting a program set up there, and I saw some kids vaping in the hallway, and I'm sure they thought they were just vaping some sweet flavor, or maybe they knew they were vaping marijuana, or maybe they were intentionally vaping nicotine. I don't know, because I didn't talk to them. I just saw them vaping. And I've seen a lot of adults vaping, citing the health benefits of it. In vaping, in one vaping cartridge, you can get enough nicotine that would cover 20 packs of cigarettes. There's a lot of stuff, and the purity is heightened. But even deeper than that, there are other things that you're inhaling into your body in that cartridge, and you don't know what they are, because the liquid cartridge industry is not regulated. not to the extent that it should be. It's not, those cartridges aren't being checked the way that they should be. And while you do have some credible people and some credible manufacturers out there trying to provide people with a good experience, you have a lot of dubious people out there doing a lot of nefarious things as well. And then you also have a lot of ignorant people out there doing a lot of ignorant things. So at some point, we've got to start protecting ourselves from nefarious intentions, malicious intentions, and ignorance. And that starts with not being ignorant ourselves. So the goal here isn't to tell you not to vape. You're an adult. Do that. The goal here isn't to tell you how to raise your children. They're your children. Although I do have a vested interest in you raising your children correctly, because your children are eventually going to grow up and interact with me and my children. And in that, the sense of community overrides your sense of privacy in being a parent from my perspective. But that isn't what this is about. This is about me making the case that we need to take the things we put into our body a lot more seriously. And again, we need to set up institutions and organizations that are going to check these products for us, by us, and with us in mind, and make sure that these products are safe for us to consume. And if I had the resources or the expertise to do so, I most certainly would. And maybe that's what I'll do. I'll gather the resources and the expertise to do so. But in any case, let me know what you think about all this. You think it's all hogwash? You think it's another scam from the man to try to get us to stop smoking cigarettes and having fun? You think it's another ploy by the people to whatever? I don't know. What do you think? Let me know. Head on over to a Freedom Train. I forgot what it was for a second there. Head on over to www.freedomtrain.com. Click on the Lessons from the Screen tab, and you'll see this show right there in current events. Check it out. Leave a comment. Let me know what you think. Also, make sure that you're checking out all of the Freedom Train shows on any platform, on any podcasting platform that you can. It's been real, and I will see you guys next week on the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
All right, I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen right here on the Freedom Train Network. Remember to go show the Freedom Train Network some love, www.freedomtrainradio.com, spelled just like it sounds. If you can't spell it, I don't know what to tell you. But make sure you also go ahead and check out the Freedom Train Radio app. If you got an Android, we got an app. And if you got an Android and your Android ain't got the app on it, then you ain't cool. And that's all I'm going to say about that. It's in the App Store. Search Freedom Train Radio. You'll see the logo, the Choo Choo Train, calling your name. So go ahead and get that there. Make sure you show all of the Freedom Train Radio network shows some love. Give them all a hug. Leave a comment on all of the shows that you like. And even the shows that you don't like, leave a comment still telling them you don't like them and you don't like they suck a fish fried eggs. And I also want to take more time to tell you guys to go and check out our sponsors, PAX Inc., PACTSINC.org, PAXINC.org. Show them some love. And drop a line on the Freedom Train website. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us know what shows you think we should try to put together for you. The number one, the world's first black, pro-black podcast directory right here. You know what it is. You know what it does. And we look forward to seeing you, hearing from you, speaking with you, and sharing life with you every week. I will see you next week. This is your boy, Patrick Irvin.